Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 194 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, Jason.
Well, we haven't had the price fluctuations that we've had in the past week or so, so it almost seems like a dull week, but there's still a ton of stuff going on. And the big thing that I am excited about is, even though government seems to be shut down, there's actually still some talks going on. We've been talking about this market structure bill that who knows when it's going to happen. I think they were hoping before the November break-ish, but I think that's almost impossible at this point. The good news is there's a bunch of the top crypto executives are planning to meet with some of the Senate Democrats for a roundtable tomorrow on Wednesday. And the goal is to discuss the crypto asset market, the structure legislation, and things like that, right? So you'll include all the big guys like Coinbase's Brian Armstrong, Galaxy's Mike Novogratz, Uniswap's Hayden Adams, people from Circle, and other big companies too. So we've been struggling, I feel like, lately during the shutdown, where the Democrats keep sending stuff to the Republicans in terms of crypto. Stuff that just doesn't make sense. We talked about it a couple of weeks or two ago where they were almost trying to kill DeFi. So hopefully we'll kind of get all on the same page. I know Kristen Gillibrand is the one that is setting this up for the Democrats. So maybe something will happen at this point.
Not optimistic, but I walked my dog this morning, it's freezing cold. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty much a wrap for the year. Yeah. we're a couple weeks from Halloween, and I think government employees typically just round that up to New Year's. So I'm not thinking much will get done. I think they built in an additional excuse with the shutdown. So now they get to talk about that instead of talk about other things that are more important. And so, yeah, I'm back to government won't be able to get anything done because they round this up to New Year's. And then come January, it's like, well, midterms are right around the corner. So we can't do anything momentous until after midterms. So we'll see if they can get a little bit of this stuff done. But it's ever since like April or May, it seems like business as usual up there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the good news, maybe it's good news, White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett kind of came out and said that the U.S. government shutdown could end this week. Right. And part of it is he said Democrats were delaying a vote to reopen the government until after the No Kings protest this past weekend. If you look at Polymarket's data, they are predicting the shutdown to end between the 23rd and the 26th of October, so which is the end of this week. So maybe something will actually happen. And I'm kind of intrigued to see how accurate Polymarket's going to be with something like this, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's Polymarket's pretty good about nailing some of these previously unpredictable things. It's like enough people looking at it or enough different angles, and then putting money on what they think, and then where the majority of the chips fall, there's enough reason for things to happen on those at that time. So good to see we had a wildly successful No Kings protest. Still no kings, put a bunch of people in gulags for protesting against the government. So another successful protest. And the government shutdown, to me, I mean, it stinks for people that aren't getting paid. They're just normal workers. I mean, it's like war. It's like, well, it stinks for these 18 to 22 year old dudes that go out there and get shot and killed. It stinks for the FAA people or the TSA people that aren't getting paid, that live like paycheck to paycheck. So, the government sucks. So there's not a lot of ways around that. And they're kind of holding these people hostage to get this thing done. They, put it on the list of things, and it's like, oh, we'll inflate your currency and then withhold it from giving it to you. Like, it's just a crappy organization, and they continue to do crappy things.
I guess it's just helping the Bitcoin story even more, owning your own money and being able to hold it and do whatever you want to do with it. Which I guess the other thing related to the government and Bitcoin, they just seized $15 billion in Bitcoin, 130,000 Bitcoin. It's the largest forfeiture action in history. Now, this kind of doubles what was theoretically going to be part of the strategic reserve for the United States. But at the same time, this is literally just the first step. So if the court actually does find that the assets were illicitly obtained, then the investigation has to start figuring out who it was, the victims were of this, and if they're going to actually give any money back to the victims from all this. So I guess we're in for another 10 years of that happening, because I still don't think they've given the Silk Road money back, Bitcoin, from that back yet.
Oh, no, it's slow moving and people don't seem like they want to make a decision. So, you know, it's funny because it's like, yeah, you got to protect yourself against the government debasing the dollar. Oh, by the way, you need to protect yourself against the government seizing Bitcoin. Like, they may nationalize MicroStrategy, or, you know, who knows what strategies they come up with to be cash flow neutral, taxpayer funded neutral ways to collect Bitcoin. So, you know, Bitcoin, self-custody, figure it out. Like, it's kind of the easiest way. And I mean, I think the government's going to get into Bitcoin. I think it's enough companies are into it that it's the only next logical step. So, you know, the government doesn't have to wait on Amazon and Facebook and everybody else to put it on their balance sheet. They can jump ahead, and the other governments don't have to wait on the U.S. government to do it. So, you know, if you're in a foreign country, I would be all over Bitcoin right now. If I, like, dollarized countries, I feel like you feel more insulated, so you feel a little safer. But if I was not in a dollarized country, I would be all over Bitcoin.
We talked about Luxembourg last week, jumping into it, right? Some of the states are starting to do that now too. Again, we kind of went through a lull with states talking about adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet, but Florida just released a bill that would allow their state's CFO to invest up to 10% of the money into specified public funds, which I think would mean the ETFs, but I think it would also allow them to invest up to 10% of the retirement system in Florida in digital assets. So kind of a big deal. I think that's a good step forward. It also allow Floridians to pay certain taxes and fees in digital assets. The only problem with that is it sounds like they're just going to take those digital assets, turn them into cash dollars, and then put it into the general funds. Maybe not the best course of action, but at least it's we're getting somewhere in Florida.
Yeah, that's so dumb. Like, I mean, you don't have to even really pay attention to Bitcoin very long to be like, oh man, I wish somebody gave me Bitcoin in 2018. I would have surely kept it, and it would be worth 100x. And da 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 da. It's like the government's setting it up so people can give them Bitcoin, and all they're going to do is convert it into cash. Like, don't do that.
New York was in the news too. They had a handful of things going on there. The mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, he just signed an executive order creating an office focused on digital assets and blockchain, making it the first ever mayoral office of its kind in the nation. So it will coordinate between the industry and the government to make New York City more welcoming to compliant crypto initiatives. So this is interesting. His, of course, term ends at the end of the year, and he dropped out of the race for next year, for I guess here in next month, November 4th, when they vote. But I'll be intrigued to see if it actually stays, or if the next guy cuts it before they even gets a chance to start it.
Well, as long as New York City is located in New York State, I think they're going to have trouble. So good luck turning New York City into a pro-Bitcoin jurisdiction.
Well,
I'm not very optimistic about that.
Yeah. So Andrew Cuomo, who's running for the mayor as an independent, just announced that his administration would create the role of a chief innovation officer to lead blockchain and crypto innovation in the city. Now, the chances of him getting elected are very small if you look at all the stats.
Yep.
So not sure it's going to happen, but at least there seems to be two out of the three guys that were involved in the mayoral race were very big into Bitcoin and crypto. Now, I guess we'll have to see what happens with the one that wins.
Yeah, I mean, Ramadanian seems like he's out in a distant first place. I think Polymarket had him at like 58% chance of winning or something, and polls were, they had him up 20 points. I mean, it's not, you know, you can close like a 5-point gap or maybe an 8-point gap and things like that, but man, talk about a 20-point gap in the polls, is that's a stretch. So New York City, you know, look, the crazy thing about getting into Bitcoin is it leads you into like the fourth turning stuff, and it leads you down all this path of understated, like the fall of the Roman Empire, Weimar Germany, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, one of these major cities has to be the first one to fall off a cliff. And, you know, in my lifetime, New York went from a, like a crime ridden place that you couldn't visit. It was really dangerous. And then Giuliani came in and cleaned it all up like mafioso style. And so, you know, in my lifetime, in 40 something years, most everything in America has gotten steadily better, you know, like the technology stuff's gotten better. I mean, you know, maybe everybody complains a lot more, but as far as like when you're in your house, your quality of life is better. The number of houses with central heating and air is more, you know, like it's people live a more comfortable life, and it could go south quick. You know, we could see New York City just fall off a cliff real fast. And then the news media would probably not make it obvious that that was happening. But so I'm, you know, I don't want bad things to happen, but I think they're going to happen. And, you know, one of the beauties of having 50 states is we could watch New York try something and nationalize, have a state run grocery stores and see how poorly that goes. And then maybe other people don't do it. So maybe we don't, maybe, you know, in the previous fourth turnings, maybe there wasn't a United States where it can, like, a portion of the states can fall off a cliff and the others can be like, whoa, we need to turn this around now before things get too bad. So, you know, there's my most optimistic take about what's going to happen over the next couple of years.
Yeah, well, the other thing with New York, so last week they just introduced the Assembly Bill 9138, which would tax proof of work miners based on electricity consumption. We talked about this a while ago. It would add somewhere between 2 and 5 cents per kilowatt hour. This would funnel those taxes into New York's energy affordability programs for low to moderate income households, which fine, it's fine, whatever you got to do. The irony to all of this is that moves like this don't really lead to some sort of cleaner practices, because if they're already using non-renewable energy or clean energy, then they don't get taxed. This is just really going to push mining operations out of the state. So, and we've talked about some of the benefits that Bitcoin mining's had on the entire power industry, and New York apparently doesn't want anything to do with it.
No, man, New York's just, they're in trouble. You can't operate based on a feel. You know, the numbers matter. You can kind of get away with stuff. And then there's not a lot of consequences for a lot of decisions you make. But like those electrons, they either get generated or they don't. You know, they either land, you know, when you turn a light switch on, there's either electrons flowing or there's not. The only way to make them flow is to spend more money. Well, you can't sit there and dictate electricity flow. So, but I mean, if the state's going to control everything, then, you know, take over the power grid too. See how poorly that goes.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you talk about they're going after the proof of work miners, specifically pretty much Bitcoin miners, right? But there was that announcement. There was an investor group of like BlackRock, NVIDIA, Microsoft, Musk's XAI. They're going to buy this Aligned data centers for like $40 billion. And the VanEck guy did some research and he said $40 billion price tag implies a valuation of about $8 million per megawatt. And most of the Bitcoin miners value each megawatt around $3 million. So all of a sudden AI is doing 2.5x the value of power. And there's no talk about taxing on AI data centers. It's only on the Bitcoin miners. So it's kind of weird, but I guess weird is kind of the new norm.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff about like, AI, we're going to need to build out more power. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, good luck, man. I mean, without nuclear, you don't really have much of a shot at getting this done. You're not going to put any coal plants in the United States. You know, any of the intermittent power sources, solar and wind and offshore, you know, tidal, any of that, it's like, it's not going to work. So you're a decade away from building a nuclear plant under, you know, kind of today's regulations. Now, there seems to be like a very friendly approach. Like AI is handled with kid gloves. I guess everybody just really likes using it, and it's on your phone, and you can just kind of, instead of Googling it, you can grok it, and that's good for people, and they can kind of have their hand around it. But like, it's a lot of power. Like, and I think they have an opportunity here to use AI to subsidize the cost of some of these. And so, you know, you're not increasing the cost of power for lower income people, which seems to be a fight that everybody used to fight, but now it's doesn't seem to be that important because we can build AI data centers that'll put a lot of people out of work. We're in a weird spot. If you look at this from a government standpoint, it's like, okay, we need a whole bunch of power so that we can have more AI. The AI is going to displace jobs. We got to figure out what to do with those people. And we're going to have an excess, we're going to have a ton of power, but it's all going to be consumed in these data centers. What does that mean for infrastructure? What does it mean for, you know, they consume a lot of water. What does it mean, you know, for all these local municipalities that need to kind of gear up for this stuff, water treatment plants, et cetera. So, you know, I don't think that most people are serious people. And you need to be pretty serious about understanding what it's going to take to build out all this AI infrastructure. And I don't think they have it in them. I think that government has attracted people that are good at fundraising. And I don't think most technically minded, logical thinkers are good at fundraising.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. California was in the news here recently, too. They have this SB 822, which will kind of go after the unclaimed property law. And they're now including digital financial assets in that. The good news, and I think Gavin Newsom finally did something right and kind of fought against the rest of California and said the bill is going to preserve those digital assets in their native form, at least for a little while, for like 18 or 24 months or something like that. And otherwise, they'd have this forced liquidation that would create like taxable events for consumers without their consent. So I think that's moving forward, and at least it's a couple of years instead of immediately going into cash, but it's still kind of crazy this is happening.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's just a glimpse into they value Bitcoin, right? If they didn't value it at all, they're like, oh, boom, seize it, liquidate it, you know, boom, keep things moving. So, you know, there's a little like a little chink in the armor of, you know, California government being like, ah, this Bitcoin's a magical internet money. It's backed by nothing, all the crap they say. So, you know, I think it's hard to justify the mindset that Bitcoin isn't valuable. So this is, I just view this as a piece of that.
Yeah. So speaking of Bitcoin being valuable, we talked about what Square was doing to try to make it easier for businesses to utilize Bitcoin. So in Washington, D.C., there's a Compass Coffee. They last week became the first Square seller to globally process any Bitcoin payments through a standard register. And they did that during the D.C. FinTech Week. I think all 10 of their transactions completed instantaneously. This goes back to Block's plan to allow merchants to accept crypto and convert up to 50% of the daily sales into Bitcoin. This will all start, I think, on the 10th of November. The first year will have zero processing fees. And I mean, if this is successful, one, we talked about how much money this could bring to Square moving forward, but just the whole adoption of Bitcoin, this could help it bring into a whole new era, right? By eliminating the, 3% fees that most of these credit card companies are charging the small businesses for this.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a business, you're into Bitcoin, and you jump into this, and you're like, all right, I'm not going to lower my price because my customers don't even need to know that I'm doing this, but I'm going to put 3% of all of my transactions into Bitcoin, and in some future date, be able to either have benefits for customers or grow the business or sit on a reserve. I mean, 3% of all your total revenue done by credit cards for just about any business is a lot. So I'm curious to see, this whole thing is predicated on business owners being Bitcoiners first. So we'll see if that happens. But I mean, I'd be all about it if I were running a business that was doing credit card transactions.
A quick break from the podcast to talk about a little PDF I put together for everybody. I've been in crypto since about 2018 and made a lot of mistakes. The one thing I always get asked is, what would you do differently if you got in today? So what I've done is created a PDF that talks about the 10 mistakes that I've made and how not to make those mistakes ever again. If you're interested, you can check the link in the show notes or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/10 and get access to that PDF. That's the number 10 not spelled out. Back to the podcast.
Yeah, so not to be outdone, Coinbase just announced that they're going to launch an all-in-one financial platform for small and medium businesses to receive crypto. They'll also manage their assets, and they can earn up to 4.1% on USDC stablecoins. And I think one of the ways they can do that is they're not the ones issuing the stablecoin. They're kind of partnering with Circle and saying, if you do this, we can give you those rewards, because a Circle apparently can't give that to small and medium businesses. The platform is also going to include instant settlements and then access with our integrations with QuickBooks and Xero. And they're saying the onboarding could be as little as 2 days from an approval perspective. So yeah, I'm intrigued to see what happens with that and if small and medium businesses jump all over that.
Yeah, and making onboarding easy is a huge deal. I mean, you know, you need to reduce the friction that it takes for people to get on board with this stuff. And 2 days is really quick. I mean, I'm helping start a small business, and the merchant processing leg of the getting things off the ground, it wasn't terrible, but it's like, it's pretty clumsy and choppy. You know, it's like Strike's loan. You can just get on your phone, beep, boop, boop, couple clicks. All right. You know, lever your Bitcoin. Here's your loan. It's the easiest loan I've ever gotten. No doubt about it. And so if you can make this merchant processing onboarding process easier, that's a huge step in the right direction. And then if you're also saving them on transactions and, you know, on down the line, you know, even if they aren't using Bitcoin as a savings vehicle, then I think you're on the right track. And we've talked about it, you know, the user interface for Bitcoin right now is kind of crappy. I mean, the self-custody is kind of tricky. It leads to people wanting to understand how Bitcoin works, then just slows everything down and muddies everything. Where if it's like, yeah, I know, it's just like Venmo. No, it's just like swiping a credit card. Then it's like people worry less about trying to understand Bitcoin. They don't try to understand how credit cards work. They don't try to understand how the dollar works. They don't understand, you know, they buy stocks. They don't understand how that process works either. So, you know, it sounds kind of like a jerk thing to say, but like, yeah, just make it easy. People use it and it's good for them. So what's the problem?
Yeah, Coinbase was in the news quite a bit. So yesterday on Monday, they had multiple hours of service interruption. Come to find out, I think it was Amazon Web Services caused a lot of this. And it wasn't Coinbase that was the only issue or company that was having issue. Robinhood, OpenSea, and quite a few others, even like MetaMask, who pulled a lot of data from AWS, they couldn't fetch the blockchain data for their users. And I mean, it just kind of goes to show how even a lot of these things want to say they're trying to be decentralized. They're reliant on these centralized applications. I think Amazon Cloud Services supports like 1/3 of the cloud market, right? So they have such a big piece of that. When all this happened, by the way, the gas price on Ethereum went down to super low, like the ultra low level, like 0.1 GUI. So it's kind of crazy that if something like that stops everything, then it stops a lot of everything else too.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a list of the companies that were impacted. I couldn't send a Venmo payment to pay somebody back for something yesterday. And yeah, I mean, the centralization piece is a big deal. I mean, I didn't read up on all the different crypto impacted by it, but you know, if you're using AWS servers for anything, you know, you're entering a centralized world. And man, you know, as things go and technology increases, things tend to get more and more centralized, and that's more and more of a problem. So, you know, it's a good thing. It is a good thing for like, hey, Bitcoin is legitimately not centralized. If no matter what happens, I mean, if half of the United States lost internet, like all internet, then the Bitcoin network would be just fine. And if it lasted for more than 2 weeks, the difficulty adjustment would would change things up, and but all the blocks would still be minted and everything else would work. All the transactions would happen. And so it's pretty, it's a nice little stress test of the system. I mean, I think you need that. And, you know, Amazon, I'm sure, will respond and do something. A buddy of mine works for Amazon, and he's like, yeah, I'm busy today. So, yeah, you gotta get things done. And, you know, I think that if you do value the security side, the decentralization piece, you know, it's right in front of your face. You don't have to theorize why centralization is bad when, you know, whatever it was, a ton of large companies were in a lot of trouble yesterday.
Yeah. So the other thing Coinbase did, had a busy week last week, the Treasury had requested this whole innovative methods to detect illicit activity involving digital assets. So Coinbase released a 30-page response, and I think they shared it with everybody, and they talked about how the U.S. Treasury needs to overhaul decades-old anti-money laundering rules and really talk about how innovation rather than heavy enforcement is the key to combat the illicit finance and digital assets, the whole Bank Secrecy Act of 1970 that to report the suspicious transactions and are really outdated and often counterproductive, exposing a lot of consumers' personal data while doing very little to stop criminals. So they think that the bad guys are innovating in financial crime, the good guys need innovation to keep pace. So I think part of it, they were going to involve tools like decentralized IDs, zero knowledge proofs, and things like that to really know your transaction type thing for blockchain analytics. So I'll be intrigued to see how much the Treasury takes that and runs with it. But it's, I mean, exciting to see that they're kind of thinking outside the box and saying, let's do something differently. Let's not do stuff that was created 50 plus years ago. Technology has changed quite a bit since then.
Yeah, that's not going to fly. The government's not good at that. The government just builds on previous legislation, regulation, and they almost never like remove anything or start from scratch. I mean, that's most of the stuff that regulates like the internet is based on radio and TV. I mean, it's everything's antiquated. And like I said, there's just not a lot of serious people in politics. That would be a lot of work. They're not interested in doing that. So Coinbase, you know, maybe they'll outsource it to lobbyists and Coinbase can spend enough money to get reasonable regulations and legislation through. But I think, to me, that's just a shot across the bow to be like, hey guys, we're serious about this. If you're serious about it, here's what you need to do. Quit going down the path you're going down. You know, yeah. let's get serious. We've been talking about digital assets needing their own stuff for at least 5 years, right? Like they need their own regulation, like enough trying to shoehorn this stuff in and everything falls under these old regulations and legislation documents. It's like, yeah, we're past time, you know, like let's go ahead and get there. So maybe another election cycle or two away.
Well, I think the crazy part is a lot of it means that you can't hide as many things as easily, right? Because it's all on public ledger. And that could be a problem too for a lot of these governments that use a lot of very dark money to do things that they don't want anybody else to know about.
That's right.
So the other big thing that Coinbase just announced too is they are going to plan to list Binance's BNB token, which is pretty much their biggest competitor. And this is kind of a big surprise, but they kind of came out and said there shouldn't be all these like fees to list tokens. And there was, I think, a bunch of talk that Binance was going to give Coinbase a bunch of these fees. And Coinbase said, no, it should be 0% to list it. So they're going to list it. They really made their DEX pretty popular here recently. So hopefully that means that everything is going to become more normal. And on the main Coinbase website, you're going to start to see the BNB token.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting move. Like Coinbase actually kind of following into the crypto mantra, like open source feel, you know, like it doesn't matter if you're a competitor or not, you know, the open source thing kind of flips competitors into partners or like there's at least some partnership there because you're just growing the pie. So that, I wonder what that means for BNB, like from a adoption or I don't know. I don't even know if it's adoption, speculation. I mean, I feel like we don't hear nearly as much about it. I mean, there was for a while, it was pushing Ethereum as far as kind of what people were building on it or whatever. So, you know, I don't know that much about kind of where these things are. I know that I've sold BNB last cycle when it shot up and bought Bitcoin with it. I'm happy I did. So I kind of have a soft spot for BNB. That's like, and honestly, man, it's like CZ kind of got pushed around a little bit. And I mean, you know, I'm not anti any of this stuff, but it's good to see Coinbase kind of being more open to stuff. I can dig it.
I think without Binance, we wouldn't be where we are today. So they were instrumental in helping get the crypto industry to this point. Whether you like them or hate them, they're still important. But speaking of other exchanges, Kraken just announced that they're going to acquire Small Exchange, which is a U.S. licensed designated contract market operator. They're going to buy them for $100 million. And then this will allow them to establish a fully U.S.-based derivatives trading platform. We've been talking about that now that the derivatives are coming back to the U.S. and things are opening up, everybody wants a piece of it because the revenues are, the volumes are so high. So Kraken is now jumping on board as well.
Yeah, you know, I feel like Kraken doesn't really get themselves in a lot of trouble. They seem to like keep themselves afloat when you know, the Bitcoin and crypto market winners here. So, you know, I haven't used them a ton and I've kind of gotten out of it completely since my shift to like almost all Bitcoin. So, but yeah, they seem to be logical. They seem to be careful about what they do. So I'm you know, I can pull for Kraken.
Yeah, so keep it on the theme of some other companies in the U.S. So Schwab's CEO just said that the visits to Schwab's crypto platform have increased by 90% year over year, which saying that he thinks there's a strong investor appetite for the Bitcoin ETFs and futures and other crypto exchange traded products. They're saying that Schwab clients hold roughly about 20% of all the crypto ETPs in the U.S., and this, of course, is, we talked about this a while ago, they're planning to offer spot Bitcoin trading in the first half of 2026. So Schwab is kind of all in on crypto, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, that matches my guy that called me to talk about my account and saying that Schwab's going to do spot Bitcoin or spot crypto brokerage and things like that. So that's, if Schwab does it, everybody else has to do it. This is not an optional thing. I mean, it's the Bitcoin is gunpowder mentality. Like Schwab's going to bring in a bunch of revenue and a bunch of profit. And if you're a competitor to Schwab and you don't do that, then you're losing. So you can not adopt it and die, or you can adopt it and compete. So I like it. And if I'm Schwab, I'd be like, look, we can be the first of these major, serious, traditional institutions to do this. And it's working well for MicroStrategy. So being the first is not a bad thing. And when it comes to Bitcoin, it's pretty universally good as long as you get in first and then don't get out.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of getting in somewhat first, there's the first bank. So Erebor is that bank that Palmer Luckey and Peter Thiel have kind of backed. The comptroller of the currency just called Erebor the first de novo bank to receive a preliminary conditional approval from the OCC. So since I think he's been there he started his role in like July of this year, right? So this is kind of a big deal. We've talked about Silicon Valley Bank back in the day when it went under and they wanted this bank to kind of fill the gap. And the bank will be theoretically helping out startups and venture capitalists in that space that the whole choke point 2.0 had kind of gone after. Their main office is going to be in Columbus, Ohio. I think Palmer's putting everything in Ohio because that seems to be where he has a lot of history, or at least somebody from Anduril does. And then they're also going to put another office in New York City, which is interesting to hear that too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're in banking, New York still makes sense, but no, give it to me. Like, let's you know, Palmer Luckey, like him or not, you know, he gets stuff done. So yeah, it's kind of that open source mentality. Like, the more stuff that gets done, the better for me.
Yeah, Ripple's in the news too. So they just acquired GTreasury, which is the global leader in treasury management systems. Paid about $1 billion for it. The effort is to really open up multi-trillion-dollar corporate treasury market and access to many of the largest and most successful corporate customers. This is Ripple's third acquisition this year. So they bought prime broker Hidden Road for $1.25 billion back in April, and then they purchased the stablecoin platform Rail for $200 million just after that. So they think that this will enable them to tap into the multi-trillion global repo market as well. So Ripple's got a crap ton of money, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I'm Ripple, and it's weird, you know, you don't see a lot of other, like, if you believe that, hey, we're going to revolutionize banking and transfers of funds across the globe, like, hey, we need to spend money on some other stuff too. We need to buy some bolt-ons, and we need to, you know, I mean, it's basically just like a super traditional way to grow business. It's like, you know, our stock price is up, we have cash on hand, let's go buy another business and grow. It's like, it feels like they're playing fiat games.
Some really interesting news. So Roxum, they just launched a Bitcoin-denominated perpetual futures. So they're going to allow traders to trade almost every major asset, like the S&P 500 and gold, directly in Bitcoin terms, this is the first time something like that has ever been not priced in dollars and priced in Bitcoin. If you look at, I think, the BitcoinTreasuries.net, there are about $150 in Bitcoin being held by the public companies and the ETFs. It's a 400% year-over-year increase, right? And if you look at gold and the S&P, so if you look in terms of Bitcoin, right, gold has reached new highs in U.S. dollars, but relative to Bitcoin, they've fallen about 45% since January 24. The S&P is pretty similar, where that index trades at like 0.078 Bitcoin per unit, which was down from 0.12 Bitcoin in early 2024. So about a 35% decline since early 2024. So Bitcoin, shocker, is still outperforming a lot of these guys.
Yeah, you know, I feel like gold is making a huge splash. And granted, it should. I mean, like, if you've been in gold the last 20 years, the last 6 months, you've been proven right for the last 19 and a half years. Like, but if you still zoom out, and now if you zoom out on the S&P 500, gold's now beating it over a lot of time frames. But you had to eat miserable returns year after year after year in order to get there. So I don't know how many people are long-term gold bugs. You know, congratulations to them. But yeah, man, it's not great. And then, I mean, I'm happy to, you know, in 2020, when things were weird, my buddy who's not into Bitcoin called me up. We're like, hey, let's figure out something. Let's figure out how to get on top of this stuff, blah, blah, blah. And we settled on basically a company that could acquire gold. And I'm like, yeah, we went down the road, and like all the effort to start a company and run a company and then navigate the COVID rules and all this stuff that was just popping up. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to buy Bitcoin instead. And so that's, you know, Bitcoin's at 10,000 at the time, or under 10. Now we're at 100. So yeah, gold did double and almost triple in the last, you know, in that time frame. But 10x, yeah, if gold goes 10x from here, fine with me. Bitcoin's going way up, right? Yeah. Like gold can go up, and that's fine. And honestly, I'm kind of happy to see that a decatrillion dollar asset class, you know, $20 trillion asset class, can go up 5%, 10% a month, you know, big days. I mean, like, oh, okay. So yeah, whatever is pumping money into this, which is almost definitely countries, if they flip to Bitcoin and they're moving money in at 1/10 the speed or 1/10 the volume, we're going to have huge response by as far as the price goes. So, you know, it's actually kind of, I'm happy to root for gold here, because the theories that push gold price up also push Bitcoin price up. Bitcoin just moves faster because it's smaller.
Yeah. So kind of a good tie into what's going on in the treasury companies buying more Bitcoin, right? Strategy, another 168 Bitcoin for just under 19 million. They're now at 640,418 Bitcoin. So it's just an incredible amount that I'm not sure how any other company catches them at this point. Bitmine's trying in the Ethereum space. They just bought another 203,000 tokens for about $800 million. They're now at like 2.7% of the total circulating supply. I think their goal is to get to 5%. So it's yeah, still a long ways to go, but they're never going to catch Strategy unless Ethereum does something crazy and Bitcoin does something even the opposite as crazy goes down.
Yeah, and you know, it's another week where Strategy didn't draw any from the ATM, so they didn't sell a single share of the common stock, but they bought almost $20 million worth of Bitcoin. $20 million worth of Bitcoin doesn't even raise an eyebrow when it comes to what Strategy's done in the past, where they had billion-dollar buys and things like that. But they are entering kind of a new world where they're not selling into these market runs. And so, I've kind of gotten to a point where I'm just trusting MicroStrategy and Bitcoin, and I'm assuming things will continue to go up. And the grand scheme of things, I mean, if you look at kind of the price action since the ETFs came on board almost 2 years ago, it goes up and then it chills out and just hits this trading range for 6 months, 8 months, 10 months. And then something triggers it to go on a bit of a moon run. And then it doesn't come back down. And it just kind of trades around in that range. And then it happens again. It's happened three times since January of 2024. So I'd love for that to keep going. Price certainly feels low at 108, 110,000 right now. And so if I'm MicroStrategy, yeah, just keep buying steadily. And you know, Tom Lee and buying Ethereum and playing the same game. I mean, as long as Ethereum keeps going, I assume that's going to be just fine. It doesn't feel quite as rock solid, but that's may be a lot to do with the fact that, you know, I don't like Vitalik being the head man for my most treasured asset. So I prefer to have a nameless or faceless pseudonym be the person that doesn't make any changes to the Bitcoin network. So yeah, I think the treasuries are going to keep going. And I think like Nakamoto, the David Bailey vehicle, is in trouble. They're under $1 a share. I'm like, okay, fine, I'll buy some, because like it's down 80-90% or something crazy. I'm like, well, if it goes to zero, it goes to zero. But I mean, then if it doesn't, then you know, if you buy 100 shares of something that has an options market, then you can sell covered cost. So you know, it's kind of like, why not get a little speculative? You know, the Bitcoin treasury market is interesting to see. It feels very much like the altcoin market of like, I don't know what's going on, but here's some investment. I'm going to see if this thing takes off.
Well, speaking of the digital asset treasury market, there's a couple of interesting news items that came up. Evernorth is planning to raise $1 billion to build the largest institutional XRP treasury. They're going to list as XRPN on NASDAQ after they merge with Armada Acquisition Corp. They're saying their funds will go towards open market XRP buys, DeFi lending, and validator operations by early 2026. So another XRP one. And then I know you probably even don't even pay attention to this, but Barrachain, which is a layer one that uses proof of liquidity instead of proof of work. They're also EVM identical. They just unveiled an initiative with Greenlane Holdings and the Barrachain Foundation to build the first ever corporate Barra digital asset treasury. So I'll be intrigued to see where that one goes to.
You're correct. It's not on my radar.
On the stablecoin side, Bridge, which was what Stripe had bought for their stablecoin unit, they just applied for a national bank trust charter, which would allow them to provide regulated stablecoin issuance, management, and custody services if that gets approved.
Yep. No, we'll see. We'll see what happens, man. It's like time to move and shake.
Yeah. Tempo, which is the other one we've talked about a little bit. It's been kind of interesting. They're the blockchain project that's backed by Stripe and Paradigm. They just had a longtime Ethereum researcher and core developer announce that he's going to join Tempo. And he's been kind of one of the key guys in advancing data availability and sharding research. So even though he's leaving full-time Ethereum, he's going to remain a research advisor to the Ethereum Foundation. And Tempo just also raised $500 million at a $5 billion valuation. So I was kind of looking at some of the crypto investments in Q3 of 2025. There's already been more than $16 billion invested in crypto startups in Q3 of 2025. So we're starting to see a lot of money, and that's good.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, innovation requires malinvestment. So some of that money's going to disappear, and some of it's going to pay off. And when it pays off, it'll be useful. So that's just the way it has to work.
Paxos made a little faux pas. They've done some other stable coins, but they apparently minted 300 trillion PayPal or PYUSD, which is PayPal stablecoin. They made a mistake. They said the error had a technical issue. They found the root of the cause. They resolved it in 30 minutes and they burned all 300 trillion tokens. I mean, if you look at that, the US debt is 37 trillion. The global GDP is 117 trillion and they minted 300 trillion. So kind of funny to see that.
Oops. $300 trillion fake dollars. How about if we just give some ammunition to the anti-stablecoin people?
Yeah, exactly. BlackRock, they just announced they're going to roll out a revamped money market fund designed to comply with the Genius Act. So I think that's pretty interesting. And they're called the BlackRock Select Treasury-Based Liquidity Fund. So it will be intriguing to see if a lot of the people use it as kind of their reserve management under these new federal guardrails. BlackRock's getting more involved, shocker.
Yeah, I mean, if there's money to be made, BlackRock's going to show up.
And it's kind of interesting too, where I was listening to Anthony Scaramucci, and he was talking about how Bitcoiners seem to be convinced that the US dollar's days are numbered, right? But he kind of came out and said the opposite. He thinks that the dollar will remain a reserve currency for the next 50 years, and that stablecoins are actually helping to strengthen the dollar dominance versus the opposite. And I think that's something that Scott Bessent is also saying as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the stablecoins extend the dollar as a global currency. It also helps the treasury market. Like, there's a lot of benefits to the United States for paving the way for stablecoin adoption. I think, you know, he's not right about everything, but yeah, I think if you think that the U.S. dollar is going to fail in the next less than 5 years, that's Polymarket would probably pay off big, but it won't pay off in U.S. dollars, which would suck. So I don't know how you bet on the dollar failing outside of Bitcoin and gold or real estate.
Yeah. So Celsius and Tether reached a settlement, I think about $300 million. This was due back to when Celsius alleged that Tether improperly liquidated almost 40,000 Bitcoins before the expiration of the required 10-hour waiting period back in 2022 when everything was crashing. So Celsius was originally asking for $4.3 billion out of Tether, and they got $300 million. But I guess the good news is, after 3 years, that's done and over.
Yeah, that's fine with me. I'm kind of tired of hearing about Celsius. I feel like anybody that screwed up and kind of had a hand in crashing everything in 2021, 2022, I don't feel sorry for you.
Yeah. So we haven't really talked a ton about the spot Bitcoin ETFs. Last week, there was a daily net outflow of about $536 million on Thursday, which was the largest single day negative flow since August 1st. So I think that happened. It's kind of expected at this point, but now you're still starting to see a lot of stuff going on in that space. Even VanEck just filed a registration statement with the SEC for a Lido staked Ethereum ETF, which I know you probably don't pay much attention to Lido, but they have their Ethereum staked token, STETH, which is kind of that liquidity token that allows you to stake your Ethereum and still use that token to do things. That protocol has generated $2 billion in staking rewards and currently has, I think, $40 billion in total value locked. So another test at some point that'll come open once the government reopens.
Yeah, you know, let it rip, I guess. I mean, you have to throw stuff against the wall. Like, you can't be pro-innovation and be like, oh, you shouldn't even try that.
We've talked about NASDAQ being really interested in tokenizing some of the stocks. Ondo just came out and published an open letter to the SEC telling them to delay the approval of NASDAQ's plan. And the reason being, some people worry about it's Ondo's trying to be the only one in the space that can do this for now. But what Ondo kind of came out and said is that NASDAQ's proposal depends on this depository trust company figuring out a new system for tokenized settlement, but none of that information has been made public. And if they do this, then the transparency is going to be a problem, and it might give some of the larger financial institutions an unfair edge and really make it harder for newer firms to compete. So if you look at what the DTC is, it's really the switchboard of the U.S. capital markets, and everyone deserves to know how it plans to connect to the blockchain rails, right? So I think this makes sense to do. You look at the whole RWA sector in general, there's what, $34 billion on-chain, which increased 10% from last month. So it, I mean, that's kind of a fast growth. And even TD Cowen came out and said on-chain capital is going to surpass 100 trillion in 5 years, and we're at 4.6 trillion today. So you're going to see a 25x increase in just general on-chain capital, which is will be interesting to see.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the NASDAQ seems to be kind of in, not the leading edge on this, but as far as these kind of traditional financial institutions, like they're open to, like, you know, real world assets on the blockchain. So I think that that would be, I think it's a good use case, and I think it makes sense. You know, I mean, we used to hold like the bearer stock certificate, so that if you had the certificate, you own the stock, and then we got away from it to this kind of brokered system where you have IOUs on your electronic account. And I think it would be neat to go back to like having some kind of a bearer thing where you can't play games. Like the rehypothecation games are never good, but people make a lot of money off of them. So it's going to be it'll be a tough road to kind of make everybody honest, but it would be nice if they succeed.
Now you're just talking nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Honestly.
Bhutan was in the news here recently. We haven't talked about them in a while. Bhutan. Yeah. They just announced they're going to have a national digital ID platform that will issue credentials through Ethereum. What's interesting about this is originally they built it through Cardano's IOHG, and now it's going to undergo a full migration in early 2026 to being on the Ethereum public blockchain. So I think there's a lot of people that are worried about putting a national ID on a public blockchain in terms of raising some privacy risks, but I guess we'll see what happens, and I'm glad they're testing it out.
I'm glad they're testing it out in Bhutan and not in the United States.
Yeah. Kenya was in the news too. Their parliament just enacted the Virtual Asset Services Providers Bill, which was really going to allow them to regulate crypto, right? And what's interesting about that is, I mean, we've talked about Africa. They're probably, Sub-Saharan Africa is, I think, third in the whole geographic crypto adoption report. And Kenya's hoping that they think they're going to become now the gateway into Africa for crypto. So, yeah, that would be exciting to see as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at a continent that has struggled to govern itself, you know, Africa's probably number one. So if you can get a little bit of non-state currency and non-state controlled assets, I think that'd be good. And if Kenya wants to lead the way, better for Kenya. But again, I mean, you're not going to be able to play all the crooked games that these African countries seem to have played my entire life, at least. So, you know, maybe that'll help straighten some things out.
The Philippines is also in the news. Their Senate Bill 1330 is, they're seeking to mandate the blockchain-based tracking of government spending. And I think initially they'll do it with about $8.6 million. I mean, they had a lot of issues in the past where there's been $9.2 billion flagged for irregularities in public infrastructure projects. So some people are talking about that this is just going to be a technical illusion of this transparency, and that it's not really a problem having a mutable ledger. It's the weakness of the procurement oversight and audit and budget oversight and protection for whistleblowers and things like that. And they pretty much were like, well, technology can't replace the integrity of institutions. So there's probably another issue that blockchain can't fix, but at least it's, like we talked about, trying something new, and we'll see what happens, and we can all learn from that.
Yeah, I mean, if governments were interested in transparency and being and tracking the money that they spent, they wouldn't have the systems that they have or the lack of systems that they don't have. You know, hearing some of those stories coming out of the Doge guys when they came into the United States, and they're like, these checks are being cut with no notes. Like, they're just blank, like not blank checks, they're numbered checks that, but no clue where that money goes. Like, they have no interest in blockchain tracking their mistakes. I think that every country is probably riddled with a lot of this sort of, I don't know, theft and fraud. So I'd say they probably won't have much success launching that.
BlackRock was in the news. They just listed their Bitcoin ETP for UK retail investors. So that's kind of a big deal. The custody will be through Coinbase. And they just released a report too, saying that they found that there's a 12% increase in crypto investments since 2022. It seems low to me, but maybe that's just in the UK. They think 21% of UK adults are expecting to invest for the first time into crypto over the next year. So a fifth of the adults are going to be investing for the first time. That's a lot.
Yeah. And I don't know the numbers, but I would assume there's a lot of wealth that's going to get passed down in the next few years. And each time that happens, a portion of that is going to find its way into Bitcoin and crypto. So I think, I would assume there'll be a lot of first-time investors because there'll be a lot of people with money for the first time. They're like, what do I do with this? Like, I can't just sit on it as in, British pounds or US dollars. I need to go somewhere with it so that it doesn't just disappear on me.
Yeah, the UK also just sent out 65,000 nudge letters to individuals that were suspected of owing taxes on their cryptocurrency holdings. That is more than double what they sent out last year. So I guess you're seeing a lot more activity in the UK. And we'll see what actually happens and what comes out of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, UK, something's got to give with the UK, man. They're pushing everybody around a lot. So we'll see. We'll see if crypto is kind of a pressure relief valve for that country.
Yeah, Japan was in the news. So their financial services agency is apparently considering reforms that would allow domestic banks to acquire and hold digital assets, including Bitcoin, for investment purposes. I mean, this is a pretty drastic move. Back in like 2020, they barred all their local banks from holding crypto. And that was mainly due to concerns over volatility and financial stability. So this would be interesting to see. I think Japan needs to do something to kind of turn everything around over there too.
Yeah, Japan's kind of against the wall when they talk about 20 years of low interest rates and low inflation. I mean, something's got to give over there, and they've been as good as anybody about all this stuff. So I view them as a bit of a canary in the coal mine for crypto revolutionizing their economy or making changes in kind of how their central bank operates.
Yeah. Well, this one is, I saw some news about the UK and China. So the UK had a Chinese citizen defraud over 128,000 individuals in a fake investment scheme. He had 6.8 billion. He converted all to Bitcoin. He came over to the UK. They seized it back in like 2018, 2021, when he entered the UK. They're just now trying to figure out what to do with the funds. So they are considering creating a victim compensation scheme, but there's also people that are expecting the UK just to keep the seized Bitcoin. So this will be interesting to see what happens and where things go, because it doesn't really benefit the UK citizens. It would go back to the Chinese citizens.
This one's not on my radar, but it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
China was also in the news because we've been talking about it for a little while, that some of their tech giants had plans to issue stablecoins in Hong Kong. And China has, the regulators over there have instructed them not to move ahead. So they are expecting a much slower rollout of stablecoins, and they're worried about fraud and instability risks as well. So we'll see what happens and with that. But it was interesting to see Chinese companies doing a lot, and then all of a sudden China's putting the kibosh on that.
Yeah, well, China's capital controls are a big deal. I mean, they don't want any of their wealth leaving the country. So they're big on keeping a lid on stuff.
And then Malta was in the news. Going back to the BNB token, apparently back in like 2018, somebody created a cancer fund donation of about $200,000 and put it into this wallet, BNB wallet, for the Maltese government to help cancer. Well, they could never figure out how to, I guess, tax it or do whatever they needed to and spread it. It's now worth $36 million.
So that's the best thing you can do.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to make this a donation, but don't touch it.
Yeah.
Well, those are great.
And shoot, back then, Malta was talking about how they were going to be like the crypto island, and then they promised a lot, and then politics got in the way, and almost nothing has panned out, and everything is still in limbo. So there are people from Binance that are saying, hey, Malta, by the way, your government has $36 million that is supposed to be for cancer patients. I mean, it's like 15,000 people that was going to benefit, which is, shoot, at $36 million, that's a lot of money at this point, right? So, yep. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen, but it'll be interesting to see how that pans out too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it actually pays off that the government can't get stuff done when you own a appreciating asset.
Yeah. So we haven't really talked much about Bull Bitcoin, but they're an international privacy-focused Bitcoin exchange. They just released their Bull Wallet, and it's on iOS, it's on Android. They described it as their passion project and gift to the Bitcoin network, Bitcoin only, fully open source, built to prioritize privacy, security, and simplicity. And I did a little bit of research. I mean, it's fully open source, completely ad-free. It has a ridiculous number of features that you can, I mean, anything you can think of, it pretty much has, or most of it. They do have a roadmap that has a couple of new things, including like silent payments and support for all the major hardware wallets in the future too. So it is probably the most powerful Bitcoin-only mobile wallet in the industry. It's fully funded, and it has, I think, a lot of interesting things that are going to happen moving forward with that. But they have like 4 full-time developers, so it should be around for quite some time. They call it lifetime. It's lifetime funded at this point. So it's good to see that there's other options out there to help with the security and privacy piece too.
Yeah, no, I think the more people that jump into that, the sooner we get the killer app for Bitcoin wallets and self-custody. So the more the better.
Gemini and Solana just launched a Solana edition of its Gemini credit card. We've talked about some of the Gemini credit cards in the past, or you can get up to 4% with gas and EV charging, and then it goes down to like all 1% depending on a couple different variations. But the cool part about this is it's automatically staking Solana rewards. So I think right now it's like 6.77% rewards. So for people that like Solana and want to get rewards and then have it automatically staked, Gemini seems to be your card.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to get people in. I mean, credit cards seem to be turning over right now. My credit card is completely changing their reward structure and jumping the annual fee up to like almost $1,000 a year. So I'm in the market for a new credit card. I just don't get enough benefits for that. So yeah, time to look at credit cards, and good for Gemini for being out there with a Solana-based card.
Well, it's also some interesting XRP headlines. There's the Black Swan Capitalist. He went on X and told investors that they should not sell their XRP stash. He said XRP is a digital collateral for the future of the entire financial system, which, whether you agree with that or not, is a whole other issue. But at the same time, Chris Larson, who's one of their executives, just recently offloaded about 50 million XRP tokens worth $120 million. And that was like in 1 hour. So it's the first time that a Ripple co-founder has sold a substantial portion of XRP since July. So it's funny that one guy is saying, yeah, don't get rid of it yet. The founders are trying to get rid of it now.
Yeah, don't get rid of your XRP, but Ripple's going to buy, we're going to acquire a company instead of buying more Ripple. So you should not sell your Ripple, but we are going to opt to effectively sell Ripple to buy a company. Yeah, that's why I don't like crypto companies. Like, give me like a standalone token that just operates and not a company that makes corporate decisions like it's a public company.
Yeah. Talk about OpenSea a little bit. They just confirmed they're going to plan to launch their C token in the first quarter of 2026. They're also making this major shift from a pure NFT marketplace to a broader on-chain trading platform. So they are trying to be this token trading aggregator that supports 22 blockchains. They talked about that for their C token, they're going to allocate 50% of the supply to the community, with more than half of that available through initial claim on existing users and OGs. They've also talked about they'll use 50% of the revenue launch to buy the C buybacks. What's interesting is their goal is to be this home of the on-chain economy. So for a user to be able to trade tokens, NFTs, and other digital assets across chains without some sort of centralized intermediary. If you look at what's happened in the past, I guess this year, right, they've done about $46 million in revenue so far. But in the past month, it's been 66% of their annual revenue, which is crazy. For the last month is 66. That means the first 9 months they did almost nothing.
Right.
But it's this huge, they've had a 202% month over month in revenue growth. There's been about $520 million in the NFT volume space in the last 30 days, but in the token volume, they've had over $3 billion. So they're almost turning more into this exchange than they are even an NFT marketplace, since they were kind of struggling with that in the past anyways.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I was into NFTs, I would probably pivot as well.
Well, I think everybody did. It was asked. An interesting thing that I saw too, we talked about some of the AI stuff previously. There's also the crypto trading space. Well, Alpha Arena is this new benchmark platform set up to measure how well AI models work in live crypto markets. So they gave six AI models $10,000 each and gave them access to real crypto perpetual markets and one identical prompt, and that was to let them trade autonomously. Was interesting, DeepSeek was the one that came out ahead. They were up 35% in 3 days. The Grok was right behind that at 30%, and Claude was at 28%. Bitcoin during that time was at 4%, right? The other two that were interesting, GPT-5 was at negative 27%. Gemini was at negative 33%. So no surprise with some of that. I've not been a huge ChatGPT fan. I think Grok is definitely destroying them. And I guess at least with this prompt they did, but doesn't mean they're always going to win. So kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of the days back when they would have like a live streaming camera on a chicken or a hamster. And based on the actions of the chicken or the hamster, they would buy and sell different crypto. And sometimes the chicken or the hamster would do really well, and sometimes it would do really poorly. So like if two of them do really poorly and three of them do really well, they're right there with the chickens and the hamsters from 2019 or whatever that was. So like, I'll stick to Bitcoin, thanks.
And I hate bringing up FTX, but they've been in the news here recently. They're SBF is trying to appeal. He is still, of course, denying any guilt in his plea. He's blaming it all on Biden now and Biden's anti-crypto agenda. So it's funny that even SBF has slept on Biden. And apparently there's a rumor going around that they're trying to get a pardon from Trump. And hopefully that doesn't happen. But I think anything's happening at this point to try to reduce his 25-year jail sentence.
Yeah, if Trump pardons SBF, that would erode a lot of his goodwill that he's created with the Bitcoin and crypto industry. I wouldn't be shocked if that happened. You know, we still don't have a strategic Bitcoin reserve. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that haven't happened yet. And like I said, if it hadn't happened by now, the likelihood of it happening before the midterms is pretty low. So I'm not surprised that SBF's attorneys are trying everything. Would be surprised if he gets a pardon.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. Biden pardons so many different people. Maybe they just haven't gone through the entire stack of papers and there's one in there for him, someone.
You know, you make a good point. That auto pen might still be writing for all I know.
There was a ton of coin predictions here this past week that were interesting. TD Cowen just came out and said they still think Bitcoin could reach 141K by December, which I think is definitely possible. But CZ was also in the news that he tweeted out Bitcoin will flip gold. He doesn't know exactly when, might take some time, but it'll happen. Save the tweeters. So gold's at $30 trillion market cap. Could be a 14 to 15X for Bitcoin to do that. That would be great.
I have always, even when I first bought Bitcoin and started comparing it to gold, I'm like, man, my first little, I can let go of some of this Bitcoin is at half of the market cap of gold. And that half of market cap of gold has gone from like $250,000 of Bitcoin to, I guess it's got to be close to $750,000 right now.
Yeah.
So in my mind, it was like, well, I think I can get to the halfway point pretty quick, and to take it over entirely will take a lot longer just because of the asymptotic nature of reaching the top. And then, not that I consider the gold market cap the top for Bitcoin, but the higher it gets, you know, the longer it takes to go higher. So yeah, I mean, I think that it's pretty safe to say that Bitcoin will catch gold, and it's very safe to say I have no idea how long that'll take. So yeah, I mean, that's another reason why I'm more than happy for gold to run, is it continually increases the ceiling for the Bitcoin price as gold goes up.
Yeah, so on the opposite side of that, John Glover, who's the chief investment officer at Linden, he was a former Barclays guy. He just came out and said he believes the current bull run in Bitcoin has ended. So he said we finished the five wave move higher. We're now going to commence in a bear market that will last until late 2026 at a minimum. And so his view is, in the coming months, the prices will be lower than they are today. His expectation is that the bear market will see Bitcoin trading as low as 70 to 80 grand and potentially lower, which is a wild prediction. And I feel like if it goes that level, there are a lot of people that will sell a lot of things to go buy Bitcoin again.
I disagree. You know, you're talking about going to 70, let's say 70,000. I mean, that's a 40% drop from here. What price action have we seen that indicates that we're going to drop 40%? You know, Bitcoin winters happen because the price rockets to the moon and then crashes back down. We've seen no rocket. Like, yeah, there is no, you know, it's just like this stable, increasing step function going up. So could we go back down a step? Yes. But you're talking about building two foundations below this current, like, $105,000 to $125,000 range. So to go back to 70,000 or below, you need to go, you know, you need to blow through the floor that you built earlier this year in that, what was it, you know, $80,000 to $105,000 range. So possible, sure. But man, I mean, inflation adjusted, 70,000 seems like a long fall from here. Especially just because you've got a lot of people that don't sell. I mean, it's not just the hardcore Bitcoiners. I mean, the ETF guys don't sell. So the guys that haven't been in their 401k aren't selling. So to me, I'm not seeing anything that says, oh man, we hit the peak. I mean, it's convenient, I guess, that, you know, October's here, and that's usually when the peak is after the halving. And, you know, everything's different this time. We hit an all-time high before the halving and blah, 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 blah. I mean, there's a ton of stuff different about this. You know, we don't have that asymptotic price rise, or that hyperbolic price rise. So to see, to think that we're going to plummet and stay down there, that's a kind of a wild prediction, but I've been wrong plenty.
Yeah. Well, Matt Hogan from Bitwise, their CEO, came out and said that it was leverage, not fundamentals, that was last week's record 20 billion crypto liquidations. And he said, no major institutions have failed. All the blockchain systems held up. Investor panic was really muted. And one of the things he said is, if he's bombarded by emails, calls, or texts from investors, he knows there's real panic in the market and that it might take some time to cool down. Last week, when all this happened, he said it was crickets. Nobody reached out to him at all. And that crypto may be a little jittery in the near term, just because some of the market makers and liquidity drivers pull back from the market for a few days. And I think a few of them even stopped trading for a little while during all the craziness, which just created some more exaggerated moves. But he expects the market will catch its breath and renew its attention on the fundamentals. And when that happens, the bull market will continue.
Yeah, I mean, we still have institutions that are not in. So if your competitor's in and you're out and the price drops, you're more motivated to get in, which would help bolster the price as it drops. You'd have more institutional entrance. So I don't know. If you looked at the charts and you look at the calendar, yeah, okay, I could see that you would think, all right, maybe it's over and we're peaked. But if you just pay more attention, and like, if this is the peak, this is the most boring bull run. I mean, it's not even an exciting bull run compared to like companies, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm, well, I would not be impressed.
So NFTs, we haven't really talked a ton about that, but Coinbase was also in the news because they bought a $25 million NFT. There is a guy, Kobe, that had a podcast and he joked that he was going to put out an NFT. It's up to the world to decide whether they want the podcast anymore. He set the podcast at $25 million and said that he would do 8 more episodes of his podcast, Up Only TV. Like Brian Armstrong, CEO, came out and confirmed. He said the rumors are true. We bought the NFT. Up Only TV is coming back. Kobe is doing it. He went on X and was like, oh man, WTF. I'm too old to have a crypto podcast. I'm going to be out there looking like Gary Vee. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I think even in like the notes of the NFT, they said, if you do buy our NFT and we have to do this podcast, you reserve the right not to talk about you at all, or to call you completely an idiot for paying $25 million for us to do this. So I'm going to be intrigued to see what happens with this and what this podcast turns into for $25 million.
You know what? I'm on board with this. Like, this kind of has the feel of like old school crypto stuff. Like, oh, let's just try something and make it funny. And this is kind of like what that feels like. So I'm cool with it.
And then somewhat related, so Mr. Beast is in the news. He just filed a trademark for a Mr. Beast Financial, which would be an app offering a crypto exchange, payment processing, banking, and insurance services. So none of which he has applied for any of this stuff, like the FinCEN registration, a state money transmitter license, SEC, CFTC approval to do this. I think he has like 52 trademarks that his company owns. Not all of them have become actual products and services, but this will be kind of intriguing. I know he was in the mix to try to buy TikTok back in the day. So maybe he does his own crypto exchange. I don't know. That'd be kind of intriguing to see.
Well, you got a lot of people that have followed Mr. Beast for a long time that are got to be late teens, maybe early 20s by now. So 10 years from now, they're going to have like a real financial impact on the economy. So yeah, man, maybe it's smart to go ahead and get in front of it.
And then the last thing I had, we've been talking about Steak and Shake. It's been 5 months since they started accepting Bitcoin. They just launched a Bitcoin steak burger with a Bitcoin logo stamped on the bun. And they came out and said, supplies are limited, just like Bitcoin. So if you want one, stop by soon and get it.
I like what Steak and Shake's doing. And I think it's subtle enough that it's not shaken. They're not looked at as super weird, but it's Bitcoin friendly enough that it makes people like me like, yeah, let's go to Steak and Shake. I'll buy with Bitcoin. No problem.
Yeah, so that was a lot of stuff. Anything else that I missed?
Two quick ones. SpaceX moved $257 million in Bitcoin. It's the first time they moved Bitcoin since July. Doesn't mean they're going to sell it, but apparently they're a little behind on kind of the moon stuff. And so it's anytime something happens in Bitcoin, the news seems to think it's a bad thing. So instead of just like they're just moving their stash to different locations, it's got to be like these are going to sell. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I'd be surprised if they sell. And then the next thing I had is in 2020, I got a loan against some properties to buy some more properties. That loan was at 3.75% for the first 5 years. And then it has a 5-year reset based on the interest rate. So I got my notice yesterday that my 3.75% interest rate will now be a 7.24% interest rate. And my payment goes up roughly 20%. So for me, no big deal. I'm not very levered. I just like money was cheap. Like 3.75% is why I got the loan. I wouldn't have gotten it otherwise. And I think a lot of other people are a lot more aggressive when it comes to leverage than me. And mine's a 2020 loan. So this is going to be on the front end of these 5-year balloons and 5-year resets and stuff. So just, you know, when you look at like what's going on in commercial properties and everything else, I think this would be a bad thing for a lot of people. So heads up, that's probably coming.
Goodness. I know Elon Musk was also in the news. I think he told people or tweeted out that Floki was the new CEO, which is a meme coin that sparked a bunch of meme coin craziness going on too. So he has continued to stay in the mix of crypto, whether he wants to or not.
Oh, he likes to. He wants to. If he didn't want to, he could easily not talk about it. He doesn't talk much about Bitcoin anymore.
No. Awesome. Well, this has been a long one. covered a lot of stuff. Still a lot of exciting things going on. So as always, appreciate the conversation, Al, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.